Welcome to the Greenhouse.
This is the only podcast in Arizona that will take you inside the locker room.
Because if I started thinking about Kobe 2 weeks in advance, I wouldn't be able to play the games on the schedule.
We're not trying to prove anything. We're just trying to improve and eventually win a championship.
And give you hard-hitting, in-depth analysis.
What they should expect is an ERA of around 3.5, 3.7, with maybe 14 to 16 wins. That's what I think you're going to get out of Randy Johnson. If that's the case, yeah, they're paying him a lot of money, but look at the market for pitchers these days. Gil Mesh is making over $10 million a year, and that's Gil Mesh. The guy is terrible. He's terrible. Ted Lilly's making even more than that, and he hasn't been good ever in his career.
You are listening to The Greenhouse.
All right, and welcome to the show. This is The Greenhouse. My name is Adam Green, and if you listened to the show before, you probably already know that, but if you have listened to the show before, things are a little bit different. That's a different intro, different beginning to the show, and that is because I'm changing things up a little bit around here. Today is a special day in the Greenhouse lore, if you will, as we're going to start something new, having a co-host, and for that I bring in a good friend of mine. His name is Matt Stone. Matt, how you doing?
Good, Adam. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks for joining me, and I'm sure you've listened to the show before. You've claimed to have listened to a couple minutes here and there, which means that you probably think I'm smart when it comes to sports, because that's when I bring my best stuff, as the first couple minutes of the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's about time that you get some action.
Well, it's good to have you on. Today's show, we have a busy schedule in Arizona sports. The Phoenix Suns are finishing up their season. They are trying to hang on against the San Antonio Spurs. Get us some Arizona Cardinals talk. That new schedule came out, so we'll talk about that. I know Matt is a big expert on the Cardinals. And we're going to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks, first couple weeks into the season, and they are 7-3 off to a very good start, the best start the team's had since the 2002 season, I believe. So we'll get into that. But first, let's get into some Phoenix Suns talk.
And even I'll come from the bench, I have a lot of minutes, so it's pretty comfortable for me to be over there, so I like it.
Yeah, you know, Coach is trying to, you know what I'm saying, mix up a little bit and see what he can get going and see get the players going and stuff. So at the same time, we just try to do that. I also get a win and get ready for the playoffs.
We know we control our own destiny, so as long as we take care of business, we don't have to worry about the Spurs.
All right, and that is the intro for the Phoenix Suns. Those are the voices of Leandro Barbosa, Sean Marion, and Kurt Thomas. After last night's victory over the Seattle Supersonics, Suns played a pretty good game, especially their fourth quarter was outstanding as they won going away. But talking about the Suns right now, and Matt, you're living the Valley, so you know what's going on here. The Suns have four games left in this season. They have 59 wins right now. If they win their last four games, that'll be a new franchise record for wins for the Phoenix Suns. But that seems like a tall order to have. But if they can win the last four games, then they definitely have the number two seed in the playoffs. Right now, they have a two-game lead over the San Antonio Spurs. And it's getting pretty interesting here for the Phoenix Suns down the stretch.
You know, I'm not looking for them to win the record number as much as just solidifying that second point and then making sure they stay healthy until the end.
Yeah, I think health is the key. And having been a Suns fan, you kind of see this team the last couple seasons in the playoffs. They've been hurt, whether it was Joe Johnson 2 years ago, whether it was Amari Stoudemire, Kurt Thomas, and then Rajah Bell in last season's playoff. The Suns have not been able to stay healthy. And this year it seems like they are going to be, I mean, knock on wood, of course, that they are healthy going into the postseason right now. And that's why it'd be nice, I think, to win a few games here and clinch the second seed in the Western Conference. So that way, they don't have to worry about playing these guys down the stretch. You can rest Nash, you can rest Stoudemire, you can rest Marion, and play the scrubs like Marcus Banks, Jermaine Jones, Eric Pytkowski, the guys who haven't really played much this season.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, if they can clinch the division, you know, right off the bat, second spot, I mean, you know, just rest everybody. Don't even worry about the record. Sacrifice those last couple of games.
Yeah, I mean, the record doesn't matter as much. 63 wins, that'd be a great franchise record, but it is about the second seed. Now, one of the things that came out of the Seattle Sonics game today is that the Suns yet again mixed up the starting lineup, and there was some sound about that in that intro there, that players are kind of like, okay, this seems to be the norm for the Phoenix Suns these days, that head coach Mike D'Antoni hasn't settled on a rotation. Early on this season was Steve Nash, Rajah Bell, Sean Marion, Boris Dion, and Amari Stoudemire, and there have been combinations of Kurt Thomas has been in there, Leandro Barbosa has been in there, and Marcus Banks was in there for a stretch, and now we see James Jones in the lineup. This was only his third start of the season, but his first start with essentially the other guys in the starting lineup. His other two starts have come with either Sean Marion hurt or Steve Nash hurt, so it's been kind of him starting out of necessity because of injury, and the other night he was starting because Coach Mike D'Antoni thought that was the right thing to do, and James Jones was firing with a pretty good game, shot 5-11 from the floor, 3-4 from three-point line for 13 points and 4 rebounds, a steal, and an assist in the game, so he played pretty well, especially the way he's been struggling of late. And personally, I think this is a great idea for Mike D'Antoni to put James Jones in the starting lineup because then, with his 8-man rotation, you're bringing Boris Diaw, Leandro Barbosa, and Kurt Thomas off the bench. Those are three outstanding guys to bring off the bench.
Right. I mean, just because somebody's in the starting lineup doesn't mean they can get their minutes. I think it's a good idea to kind of go with the hot hand and figure out what's going to get James Jones playing the best. If that means starting him off rather than bringing him off the bench, then hey, that works for me.
Yeah, and it worked for the Suns especially, and hopefully James Jones, he'll be starting again tonight against the Los Angeles Lakers. This broadcast is happening early Friday morning. So this game, he'll be James Jones' second start with this lineup, and the Suns looking to kind of capture some sort of momentum going into the postseason here, and it looks like James Jones might be that guy, and you know what, he seems like a perfect complement for this Suns starting lineup because he doesn't have to be the guy to score. Yeah, he's a spot-up shooter, he's a jump shooter, he's very streaky, but he'll also give defense, and that's something that the Suns need, and he'll be able to kind of protect guys like Steve Nash and Sean Marion from getting into early foul trouble on those wing guys. So that's what the Suns talk right now. Moving on, coming around after the break, getting in some Arizona Cardinals talk. The new schedule came out, and also some news about Edgerrin James maybe having knee surgery over the offseason. You are listening to The Greenhouse. And welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Greenhouse, and this is Friday now, April 13th, so didn't really give the date early on here in Phoenix, Arizona. And we kind of had some bad weather lately, but one place that does not care about weather, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, as we know they play in a dome. And looking at the schedule, you see Major League Baseball, they've had some scheduling issues lately with teams having to play in the snow. The Arizona Cardinals won't have that problem. And Matt, my first impression looking at the schedule is that pretty favorable for the Cardinals. What do you think?
Well, it looks pretty. I mean, their home schedule, it's all right. The away schedule, I'm not sure about.
Yeah, well, I read in the newspaper in the Arizona Republic today that the Cardinals actually have the easiest schedule as far as last season's winning percentage of all the NFL teams, and granted, that doesn't always work because last year, I'm sure teams were looking at it and say, oh, we got the New Orleans Saints, that's great, they're terrible, and look at them, they win their division and make it to the NFC Championship game. But it always helps to have a schedule where the teams that you are playing weren't necessarily that great the year before. And my impression looking at this, I mean, they start off on Monday Night Football in San Francisco, which is kind of payback for starting off against the Niners last year to open University of Phoenix Stadium. But the big thing, and I think we talked about this last night, was that they have four of their final six games at home. And if they are in the playoff hunt down the stretch, that could be huge. I mean, you got the Niners at home, the Browns at home. Those are two winnable games. And then you finish up against the Falcons and the Rams, another pair of winnable games at University of Phoenix Stadium. So if the Cardinals sit in there, maybe at 6-6 or 5-5, and you know, going down the stretch here, those could be some very important home games and very favorable scheduling for their playoff push.
Well, I mean, the big advantage, and they say this every year, is the Cardinals play in the NFC West. And last year, you could actually see that they dominated that division. I mean, they were 4-2. Mm-hmm. Leinart was 4-0 against the NFC West. So, I mean, I definitely think they're going to take advantage of that, especially with St. Louis at home, and then even Seattle down the stretch. If they are in the playoff hunt, well, that's a big thing.
Yeah, I guess we're kind of putting the cart before the horse here, so to speak, saying the Cardinals, if they're in the playoff hunt down the stretch, this is the Arizona Cardinals we're talking about. We got to be careful when using the P word around there. But a couple of other games of note, they're hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers September 30th, a rematch between Ken Wisenhunt and Russ Grimm versus the Pittsburgh Steelers, who decided not to hire either one of them. Another good game, I think, the Carolina Panthers, it seems like every other year they're a Super Bowl team. You know, every year they seem to be a Super Bowl favorite early on, but every other year they're actually very good. So this seems to be one of their good years, and they are coming to University of Phoenix Stadium October 14th. And, of course, you got the obligatory Detroit Lions game. It seems like these two teams play every single year, and every single year it's one of the worst games of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Pittsburgh is going to be a very hyped game. Carolina, I think, is going to be an interesting game because by that time, are you going to be seeing Jake Delhomme? Are you going to be seeing David Carr? And then, of course, Detroit is basically the ineptitude bowl again.
Yeah.
But, you know, hopefully the Cardinals can at least come out with a victory from that game. You know, ugly or pretty, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, usually that's the game that determines the draft spot, where you're kind of at that point thinking that you want the Cardinals to lose so they can move up in the draft a little bit, and they end up winning just to spite you, it seems like. And last year, the Lions got the better of the toilet bowl by losing, and that's why they are picking second in line for Joe Thomas. And not going to talk NFL draft. That's going to be a couple weeks down the show, because we still got a couple weeks for the draft, and I think there's a lot of stuff going on. But kind of want to talk about here, Edgerrin James. The news came out that he had fluid drain from his knee. I looked at that story and said, okay, whatever, not a big deal, because if it was, we probably would have heard about it. Is that your impression too, Matt?
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, he's obviously not as young as he used to be, and this is just what happens. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's not a major surgery. He might miss a couple of workouts, a couple of camps, but nothing big.
All right, and speaking of camps, the other thing, there was rumors, or I guess talk, Ken Wisenhunt said the opening line for the quote-unquote voluntary minicamp that starts up later this week is going to be at left tackle. You got Oliver Ross, which, if yeah, I'm serious, Oliver Ross. And you got Reggie Wells, you got Al Johnson, the new free agent, Deuce Latouille, and I'm blanking on right tackle. Oh, Mike Gandy, the guy they just signed. And looking at that line, doesn't exactly inspire confidence, but then again, when has the Arizona Cardinals ever had an offensive line that would inspire confidence?
Well, the biggest thing for me is the move from Reggie Wells off of right tackle. He was the one stable person on that line, and yeah. Now all of a sudden he's going to left guard, going to right tackle, covering his blind spot. What I really think that means is that they're looking to get Joe Thomas and left or right, and I think they just that the best way to do that is to move Reggie inside.
Well, Reggie inside, too. I mean, last season he was inside. He was one of the guards, and he seemed to be one of the weak links on the offensive line. Then they moved him to right tackle, protecting Matt Leinart's blind side. And I thought he did a very good job. I thought he was one of their better linemen down the stretch last season. But then again, their line did seem to pick up their play a little bit down the stretch, and you kind of hope that they weren't taking all those steps forward just to take a few more steps back this season. But well, I guess, like you said, a lot depends on whether they can get a guy like Joe Thomas in the draft on that offensive line. And the other rumor coming out now, Ken was saying that they want to switch. You know, everybody keeps saying that since he's from Pittsburgh and they traditionally run a 3-4 defensive scheme over there, that's what the Cardinals are going to be running soon. And then there's the argument saying they don't have the personnel to do it, so they won't, and Ken Wisenhunt won't do that. But now they're kind of saying that he wants Clancy Pendergast, the defensive coordinator, to incorporate some of the 3-4 type of schemes. And I don't know if the Cardinals have the personnel, but personally I love the idea. I think, hey, if it makes your defense even a little bit better, gives you a different look, then why not?
Well, I definitely think it could work. I mean, they don't have a pure linebacker, but I mean, they're going to move Barry, some kind of a linebacker defensive end. They're moving Dockett to end. I mean, they got the real nose tackle there. And I mean, you know, they got Dansby, they have Gerald Hayes, they have talent. I'm just not sure they have enough talent to be as effective of a 3-4 as Pittsburgh was.
Yeah, well, Pittsburgh, that's what they do is a 3-4 defense, and what the Cardinals do is more like the Matador defense. But hopefully that'll change the Arizona Cardinals, so a little bit of news out of there. The NFL draft is a couple of weeks away. That should be fun, the Cardinals holding the 5th pick in the draft. Well, that's your Cardinals talk for the Greenhouse Show today. Coming around the break, we're going to talk about the Arizona Diamondbacks. Yeah, I'm Adam Green, this is Matt Stone. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to this show. You're listening to The Greenhouse here, the only podcast in the state of Arizona that takes you inside the locker room. Talked about some Phoenix Suns earlier, got into some Arizona Cardinals talk, and now it's time to get to almost what's the new talk of the town, the Arizona Diamondbacks. They've been painting the town their new Sedona red color, and they're off to a 7-3 start, one of the best starts in franchise history, and it's on the back of the new wave of baby backs. And Matt, first question for you is this team for real?
I think it's a little too early to tell exactly how the offense is going to do. I mean, they're very young. Pitchers are going to adjust after they see these guys a couple of times. Same thing with Micah Owings. But for the most part, I think this team can be very good.
Well, personally, I'm looking at this team and saying, yeah, they're 7-3, but you got to look at four of those wins came against the Nationals, and they are probably going to be the worst team in baseball. They're going to give the Kansas City Royals a run for their money. So you kind of got to temper it there because they're terrible. For lack of a better term, they suck. They can't hit. They can't pitch. They're just an awful team that they have in Washington, which is sad because just a couple of years ago, I thought they were one of the better teams in the National League. I think they were .500 a couple of years ago with Frank Robinson as their manager, and then they just fell apart, traded some guys, lost some guys. Soriano's gone, and they are just an awful team so far this year. So that's four of your wins right there. And a couple wins against the Cincinnati Reds, who seemed like they could be a decent team. I was at the game Tuesday night, and the thing that impressed me about this team is how scrappy they are and how there's really not a big hole in the lineup as far as guys that can get on base, where if, like, Eric Burns, for instance, had a really bad game, had a few strikeouts, and he would strike out with a runner on third base and one out, next guy would come up, would be like Connor Jackson, he'd get a base hit and kind of pick up Eric Burns. That's one of the best things about this Diamondbacks team that they have, is that ability to pick each other up. But on the flip side of that, man, I don't know if you've seen this like I have, but because of that, they don't have that big threat, and that's why they're one of the worst teams at scoring runs. They're going to score maybe 3-4 runs a game because they don't have that big power back. The game I went to, they hit like 3 home runs, and it was amazing, and that pretty much doubled their home run total for the entire season.
Well, they're definitely not a conventional team. I mean, you have Orlando Hudson hitting in the third spot, which is just, the first time I saw that, it just confused the hell out of me.
Me too.
But, I mean, you got Carlos Quentin coming back from injury. I mean, he hit like 6 home runs in his first 30 at bats. I'm not really exactly sure on that, but I mean, he has power. Steven Drew has power. Chris Young has power. It's all about just these guys kind of tapping into that. And you're right, there's no 40 home run guy on the team, but they can score some runs.
Well, and they better, and their pitching staff also has been very good to start this season. Brandon Webb had a rough one to start the season in Colorado, but he came back with a nice start against Washington a few days back, and then Leivon Hernandez has been amazing in his two starts. But the big story, I think, right now, is what the Diamondbacks can do with their fifth spot. Because we assume Randy Johnson coming back, he's the number four guy. In the rotation, technically, he's number four guy. You got Webb, you got Hernandez, you got Doug Davis, and you'll have Randy Johnson as your top four. The fifth guy going into the season was Edgar Gonzalez and Micah Owings, and the thought was that Edgar Gonzalez, since he was out of options, he'd be the pitcher that got the starts because they can't send him back down without the risk of losing him on waivers. And they'd keep Micah Owings for a couple starts and then send him down when Randy comes back. But now Micah Owings, and not to say Edgar Gonzalez, he's pitched pretty good himself. He's off to a decent start. Had one really good game, and the Cincinnati game was kind of rough, but they got the win, so that's all that really matters. But Micah Owings, in his two starts, has gone 11 and a third inning, giving up only 8 hits and only 2 earned runs, walking 4, striking out 11, for an ERA of 1.59. Now, granted, he's 1-1. He was a tough luck loser a couple nights ago in that finale against Cincinnati, but can they send Micah Owings down now and keep Edgar Gonzalez?
Oh, absolutely, and they're going to do that. I mean, Edgar Gonzalez hasn't had enough of a chance to prove that he's not pitching this year. So they're going to strike down because otherwise they lose Edgar. So, I mean, it's just a move, but obviously if he struggles in games, he's going to either move to the ball.
Let's see, I kind of got to disagree with you there because Edgar Gonzalez, yeah, he hasn't had a lot of chances to show this season whether he's a good pitcher or not, but this is a guy in the past has been one of the worst pitchers that the Diamondbacks have brought through their farm system, and I've always thought he had the stuff. He always seems to have good stuff. He's got a plus fastball, good breaking balls, but he never seemed to have the mental makeup. Now, maybe that's changed. Maybe this year he has the mental fortitude to be a major league pitcher, but how can you send down Micah Owings? It's not like Micah Owings is a 20-year-old. He's 24, which means he should be pretty much in the major leagues right now. If he had skipped college or if he left early, he'd be pretty much in the major leagues right now with his kind of stuff. And his stuff, while it doesn't wow you, he gets the job done. And I think he's the guy that you have to keep. And if you have to risk losing Edgar Gonzalez, I mean, you can try to trade the guy. But if you have to risk losing him, I mean, how can you do that to Micah Owings, who looks like he could be one of the best pitchers on your team, and he's only 24?
Well, the big thing about that is they've only pitched 2 games each. I mean, Micah Owings has not had as much MLB experience as Edgar has, so there's a lot more film on Gonzalez. And, I mean, Owings is pretty lucky. I mean, I have no doubt he's a good pitcher. But right now, you can't, oh, he has a 5.9 ERA and stick with that. I mean, he just hasn't pitched enough in the big leagues, whereas Edgar has more film, seen him more often, so I think he needs to have the benefit of the doubt and get a couple starts.
And you may be right, and honestly, I'd expect the Diamondbacks to kind of go with your line of thinking that, you know what, doesn't hurt to send Owings down, give Gonzalez a chance, just because worst comes to worst, you end up releasing him later on and bring up Owings again in another month. But this kind of looks like, if you remember a few years back, Brandon Webb, his first career start was against the Mets in Shea Stadium as part of a doubleheader. Randy Johnson pitched the second game. Webb pitched the first one. And they brought Webb up just for that start and then sent him right back down when they activated Randy Johnson. So kind of seems like almost the same situation where Randy Johnson's kind of taking the place of the up-and-coming pitcher. But I think that's good, some Diamondbacks talk there. But one last question we'll talk about this year. Any big surprises so far this season for the Diamondbacks? Anybody that's really stood out for you?
Probably just the entire staff. I mean, I did not expect Davis and LeVon Hernandez to step in and do this well. Micah Owings, obviously, a big surprise. I'm not surprised about his shaky start. He had the one bad game. Definitely going to that. I'm looking forward to seeing how Johnson.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are anxious to see how Randy Johnson does this season because he could be the key. I was talking to my dad about this leaving the game the other night. And that if Randy Johnson pitches like Randy Johnson, he's not going to be Cy Young Randy Johnson, but if he can be pretty decent, a capable number two, number three guy, this team could have a pretty deep rotation, and in the odd event they make the playoffs, if you can throw up Brandon Webb, LeVon Hernandez, and Randy Johnson as your top three guys, you could maybe do some damage in the postseason. But looking at this, my big surprise is Orlando Hudson. We talked about a little bit earlier that you mentioned how when he was put in the three hole, it was kind of like, what is Bob Melvin doing? And all he's done is respond with a .390 average with two home runs and seven RBIs. And he's been great so far this season. He's a gold glove fielder and got off to a slow start last season. And he's off to a torrid start this season. So that's just awesome. Good to see. Hopefully he can keep up. Because I have him on like three of my fantasy baseball teams. So I'm kind of hoping Orlando Hudson keeps this up for the entire season. But not likely to keep this pace.
Well, I mean, you look at last year. He started out hitting roughly .200. And by the end of the year, he climbed his average up to just below .300. I think it was the highest on the team except for who didn't play the full season. So, I mean, the guy is a really good hitter. He's got speed. He's shown he has some bat.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not too surprised by his start. I am kind of surprised to fit into this third role, though.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking, but apparently Bob Melvin isn't the total dumbass that I thought he was. But you never know. I guess there's still time for him, the true dumbass, to show through. But anyways, I think that's going to do it for the Greenhouse today, the April 13th edition. I want to give a big thanks to Matt Stone for joining me on the program today. Matt, how'd your first podcast go, do you think?
Oh, I think this is the best one ever.
It is your best one and probably your worst one too, but those will get better. Hopefully we'll have you back on the show at some point, maybe next week, and we'll talk about the Cardinals and their draft prospects. But anyways, for Matt, I am Adam. You've been listening to the Greenhouse, and we will catch you next week. All right, goodbye.